Hello, everyone. My name is Adelia Volkanov, and I'm here with my friend and co-host, Colin Bones. This is episode 65 of Ron and Hermione Minus a Romance, and we will be diving into chapters 1, 2, and 3 from Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. Last episode, we tied in trivia, and Colin won Rock, Paper, Scissors, so he will give you the question of the day after our disclaimers.
We'd like to first and foremost disclaim that we on Ron and Hermione Minus the Romance do not agree with or support J.K. Rowling's bigotry and prejudice in any way. We do not tolerate hatred of any kind and wish to create an open, safe environment on our podcast. Everyone is welcome and encouraged to listen here. This is your major spoiler warning. If you do not wish to hear anything beyond this point in the Harry Potter books discussed, this is not the podcast for you. We will be discussing and heavily referencing all media in the Harry Potter magical universe in every episode, so if this is your first encounter with the Harry Potter world, you have been forewarned. Now, if you're still here, enjoy the show! Wait, I did? Oh, shit.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Remember, it was like a big deal. You broke like my 9-episode streak.
I guess I have to say, if you could make an unbreakable vow with anyone, who would it be and what would it be?
I feel like, okay, my thought process for this is, who do I actually trust to follow through with whatever we're making an unbreakable vow about? I feel like if I say someone's name right now, we're going to have to beep it out.
Okay, you're thinking of someone very specific.
Well, like, what do you mean? Like, how general could I get?
I was just going to say something stupid, but I guess.
I mean, for the sake of you later editing this, because I know that you hate doing that, I feel like I would trust you in some situations enough to make an unbreakable vow. It depends on what it is, though.
What would the unbreakable vow be? What would you make me vow to do? Or else I die.
If I was really, like, frustrated, like, if we weren't, like, recording or, like, whatever, I'd be like, you have to promise me that we're, like, gonna record once a week or something. And so, I mean, yeah, that's only if I was, like, really desperate or something. So, yeah. What about you?
I think I would make you, what would I make you do? This is scary. I'd make you edit these damn episodes because I'm tired.
Yeah, that would be really stressful. Especially if there was, like, a time crunch, and you're like, you're gonna edit this episode before tomorrow and have to, like, learn how to do it first.
Yeah, I love that it sounds like our entire personality is this podcast. Yeah. We are the most stressful things in each other's lives. So.
So true.
We're in for a good one today. So.
Woohoo!
Let's begin with chapter one. The Other Minister. Bum, bum,
yay.
Bum. Okay, so.
Probably the most boring chapter.
I was gonna say, I feel like some people, like, really like this chapter. Because, I don't know, it's different. But I think it's boring. It's a struggle for me to get through.
The thing about this chapter and the second chapter, like, they're not my favorite. Second chapter is interesting, for sure. And like you said, I think, last time we recorded, I remember you mentioning that, like, these two chapters are the first times in the series that a book doesn't, like, open with Harry, and it's also kind of the first time that we're, like, somewhere that he isn't. Like, I don't think that happens really any
other
place in the series.
It definitely It happens, like, almost every book.
Anyways.
Like, every book opens with that.
Stop. I can't remember exact with what.
Something different. The first book does that?
I don't mean that the opening of the book... I don't mean that the opening of the book is always the same.
No, they always start off with something that isn't Harry, for most of them. The first book, it's with Dumbledore and McGonagall and Hagrid. And then in the...
I feel like I remember you making a point like this, but
in the fourth book, it's about the Riddle House. And then in the fifth book... No, it's not the fifth book. In the last book, it's with Voldemort at the meeting.
What do I remember you saying
I don't know.
About this? Because
it clearly wasn't insightful enough for you to remember.
Okay, but anyways, I don't know. I feel like the tone of these two chapters really sets off the book, like, well, regardless of what I remember about the other openings. But it's like, I don't know. They're kind of really sinister, especially like.
I think I was saying that this is the only book that opens with two chapters that are not about Harry.
That's probably what I was trying to say. Anyways, but, like, finding out about, like, events in the Wizarding World, specifically the fact that, like, people have been killed, like, but through the lens of, like, the Muggle Prime Minister is interesting for, like, a second, and then the rest of the chapter kind of just drags. But, like, and then the second chapter is really sinister because it's, like, very mysterious, and you're like, what is going on? And I kind of really love that, like, Draco thing is, like, right at the beginning of the book, because later, when the trio are arguing about whether or not Draco's a Death Eater, it's, like, that's what kicked the book off, and it's, like, we know the entire time. So, like, I like what the chapters, like, serve, like, for the book, but, like, reading them, I'm kind of just, like, pick up the pace. Like, come on.
Yeah. So, the Muggle Prime Minister is doing Muggle Prime Minister things. He is interrupted by a man in a portrait saying he must meet with Cornelius Fudge at once. So, Fudge appears. This also takes place in, like, the past. Like, when does this first encounter happen? I don't know.
What do you mean? Like, the first time
yes,
they met?
The
or
first
like
time
them
they met.
Meeting, or them...
Is it the first book? I don't remember.
I can't remember what they were talking about the
it
very first time.
It must have been
I
the first
was...
book. I think they just talked about Harry Potter coming to school or something like that.
I remember they talked a lot about Sirius Black.
But that was later.
So.
Yes.
Later, yeah.
So, Fudge... Oh, no. So Fudge appears in the fireplace, and the Prime Minister has flashbacks to the previous meetings. And he recounts their first meeting, where Fudge says they won't meet unless there is anything serious. So...
Which means that they meet every single year for, like, the rest of the time that he's Prime Minister.
So is the implication of this that all world leaders are aware of their respective wizarding governments?
Yes, but to be honest, I don't know if I think that the wizarding government is that developed, like, on a global scale.
Well, there's like, different governments.
I wonder, though, like, do they... True. I have no... I mean, maybe, like, it depends on the position, you know? Like, I don't think, like, someone like Dolores Umbridge, like, associate to the Prime Minister, whatever her title is, I'm sure she has a Muggle counterpart, but I don't think that they have met. I think that it would, like, have to be a very formative, like, the Prime Minister. I have no idea, though, because maybe, like, wizarding governments in other countries operate on, like, a they-don't-need-to-know-us.
Sure.
Anyways,
the Ministry of Magic is actually supposed to be somewhat progressive with their Muggle-wizard relations.
Yeah. So I'm sure there are some countries that choose not to involve
yes.
Muggles at all. But, yeah.
Like, not to bring up Fantastic Beasts, but that was, like, a whole thing. That, like, the U.S. government does not allow wizards and muggles to get together. So, yeah. I forgot about that. I still have not watched that third movie. I don't know how long it's been out, so.
No. But you all can listen to us read the plot summary off of Wikipedia on our Instagram, if you so would like to.
So the next time they meet is when Sirius Black is on the loose.
Scary.
And then they talk about the Quidditch World Cup and the Triwizard Tournament. And then the Azkaban breakout. So a lot has happened in the time they've known each other. So, yeah.
Yeah. I love that this guy was probably expecting to never see Fudge again after the first time they met. And it's been every year something new. And I loved the part where Fudge was, like, leaving. But then he's like, oh, by the way, we're importing 4 dragons to, like, you know, England right now. Or Scotland. I don't know where they were. And he was just like, so, you know, just...
Yeah.
Sit with that. And then he just left.
So Fudge arrives, and he's basically just saying that a lot of the incidents that have been happening in, like, London recently have been wizard-related because, like, Voldemort's on the rise again.
It's amazing to me that, like, we're supposed to believe that Muggles are so stupid that they see people getting murdered with no explanation, no wounds, whatever. And they just chalk it up to, like, oh, weird, and move on with their lives.
I don't think I would... Well, like, I don't think necessarily, if I saw on the news, like, this person miraculously died with no murder wounds, I think, wizards. You know what I mean?
That's not what I mean. It's just, like, it seems like Muggles get involved in this kind of stuff semi-frequently, and then it's just, like... But, like... Nothing, like, that would be everywhere on the news if it actually happened, like, just miraculously dying, like, no wounds.
I mean, it and, wasn't like, that somehow many always look terrified. Necessarily. And it's just stuff like a bridge collapsing in a hurricane aren't necessarily, like, super suspicious things. So the second Wizarding War has begun. We knew that at the end of the last book. But, yeah. So, Fudge also reveals that he got fired or sacked.
Yay.
And he's been replaced by Rufus Scrimgeour. Yeah. And...
Yay.
Okay.
Okay, wait. My question, because when Fudge was there talking to the guy, he's saying, like, yeah, this, and this, and this is all, like, wizard-related. He mentions that it's really, like, misty because it's Dementor breeding season. But I just personally cannot even begin to, like, wrap my mind around how that works and why it causes mist. Like, he just was like, yeah, you know, the Dementors are breeding, and it's just misty. Like,
I don't understand. Do they have genitals? Do they lay eggs?
I don't even know. I'm sure that that's an answer that I could find somewhere, or that someone made up, like, on Reddit or something.
Oh, I'm sure it is not a good idea to be looking up, like, pregnant Dementors on Google.
That's not what I was gonna Google search.
But Scrimgeour, too, meets with the minister and discusses security arrangements. Yeah, that's pretty much the end of that chapter.
Yep. Yay.
So, chapter 2, Spinner's End. Narcissa and Bellatrix are going to visit Snape at Spinner's End. Narcissa wants Snape to help protect Draco, who has been made a Death Eater and has been assigned a mission by Voldemort. And they are very... nonchalant and are very carefully not saying what the mission is, which feels a little bit weird in this context, but yeah.
This chapter is kind of strange. Like, I like the way it's written, but, like, I feel like one thing that irks me about this chapter is that the nicknames feel really forced.
Sissy?
It feels like J.K. Rowling was like, they're sisters, I want them to have nicknames, but, like, it just feels so, like, forced. Like, they never use them again. They're using them now, and they're using them all the time, like, just constantly in this chapter, and it feels so, like, forced. I don't know. I don't like the nicknames. That's just me, though, but it kind of, like, it's just something that every time I read this chapter, I'm just like, I don't like that.
So Bellatrix says that Narcissa should not trust Snape because he did not take part in the Battle of the Department of Mysteries, and he's been suspicious through the years. And she doesn't know if Snape is really on their side. And basically the rest of this chapter really just serves to try and convince us that Snape is in fact on Voldemort's side, even though it's still not really that believable. But,
This episode is brought to you by the Big Red Button Podcast.
Do you know what you'd do in a nuclear apocalypse?
Because we sure as quack don't.
See how our choices get us into trouble and back out again in this actual play podcast.
Big Red Button is for lovers of the Fallout franchise, choose your own adventures, and tabletop role-playing games rolled into one big audio drama.
Our band of stragglers is unraveling a mystery in the wasteland, and we're at the mercy of the roll of the dice.
So grab your Geiger counters, take your rat away, and subscribe to our new show, The Big Red Button.
I don't know. I think that Snape's, like, double agent stuff is really interesting. And, like, I think that had the seventh book, like, never established it, it would kind of be impossible to know what side he was really on. It's even still kind of, like, not 100% clear after the seventh book. So it's, like, I kind of, like, am really interested by all of his double agent
stuff. Yeah. He basically says a lot of stuff that, like, he thought he stopped Quirrell because he thought he wanted the stone for himself, and he didn't want to kill Harry because Dumbledore would not let that happen, and he didn't take part in the Battle of the Department of Mysteries because Voldemort ordered him to stay at Hogwarts. So Snape also tells Narcissa that he knows about Draco's mission. Still not saying what that mission is. So Bellatrix tells Narcissa that she should be proud, but Narcissa believes that Voldemort is sending him on a suicide mission as punishment for her husband's failure. So
I think Narcissa is such, like, an interesting character because it's, like, it's obvious that, like, she's a coward and, like, she's not a good person and she's just looking out for herself, but, like, it's interesting how they show that, like, she's still a mother and that she still, like, loves Draco, like, he's her son.
Absolutely.
And she's still, like, horribly distraught over, like, the fact that this is a death sentence. Like, this, like, there's absolutely no way that if Draco, like, had zero help from anyone, like, that this would have ended anyway but badly. And so it's, like, it's so interesting to see, like, how, like, she doesn't really belong to a clear side. Like, right, she's with the Death Eaters, but as we see in the seventh book, it's like she'll help anyone if it means that, like, she and her family are fine, but other people can get hurt. So it's like I love watching her character because she's not, like, heavily featured in the books or anything. Like, I feel like she is more in the books than she is in the movies. But I don't know. It's just interesting watching her character because she, like, will either, like, help or sell out anyone if it means, like, at least Draco is, like, fine and that he's fine and they're fine. And, like, I don't think this actually happens in the book, but I love in the movie where they show the three of them running from the Battle of Hogwarts.
Yes.
Like, I feel like it's such, like, a good way to, like, without words and without extra, like, obnoxious scenes, to just show, like, just at their core, like, who they are. Like, you know, it's, like, it's just about them. Like, no one else exists if it means that they're inconvenienced or that they get hurt. So I like this chapter for Narcissa. Like, I think she's really interesting. And I like, seeing, like, the lengths that she'll go to for, like, her family.
Yeah, I like that, like, a general theme of Harry Potter is that, like, a mother's love is, like, the most powerful thing in the world. Like, Harry's constantly being saved by that with, like, Lily and then Molly and then Narcissa in the end. So, yeah. Snape offers to help Draco, and Narcissa asks him to make an unbreakable vow, and he agrees.
Ooh.
And Bellatrix is the one, like, stating the terms.
I wonder if Did Snape only agree or suggest to do the unbreakable vow because he already had orders from Dumbledore?
I think it would have... Well, obviously, it would have been suspicious if he said no.
Wait, I forgot. Did he suggest it in the book, or did she?
She did.
Okay. Yeah. So it's like, I wonder, like, obviously, like, it would have been weird if he said no. But, like, I don't know. Was he only, like, more, like, readily, like, chill with doing it because he already had orders from Dumbledore? Or, like, do you think that... I don't know. Like, I wonder what he would have done, like, or what he could have done. Like, because I feel like with the unbreakable vow, is there no way to pretend, like, could he have pretended to, like, help Draco and still not died? Or,
yeah.
Like, what are the contingencies?
I don't know.
I don't understand, like, how much.
Well, Dumbledore knows what Draco's mission is because Snape knows what Draco's mission is. So.
Right.
It's. I feel like they've had to have already had the conversation before.
Right.
I mean, the unbreakable vow has not been made a thing until this very moment before. So,
right.
So Snape agrees that he will watch over Draco while he attempts to carry out his mission as a Death Eater. He will protect him and make sure he comes in no harm, and that he will do the job for Draco if he proves unable to do it himself. And Snape agrees to all the terms in the vow.
Yay.
That's the end of that chapter.
You know what I just realized is I forgot, you know, the note that I've had written in that place for, like, 2 years?
Oh, my gosh. Yes, just so you know.
I forgot.
Adelia has, when we were first writing this, we have a group, like, Google Doc to organize everything. And she wrote down a note for the first chapter, or I guess it was this chapter, of Half-Blood Prince. And
yes.
I've been staring at it for,
it's,
like,
yeah.
I guess over a year now. Yes. And now I need to know what it means. What's the deep?
Okay. Okay. So, I'm keeping, like, the idea of what I wanted to say the same, but I did have something, like, written, and it just sounds stupid to me now, but, like, I still, like, think the sentiment is there. I hope that no one's expecting something groundbreaking, because it really isn't. I just thought it was when I was 14. I was like, this is the most insane thing anyone has ever thought of. It's not. Anyways, yeah, I don't think it was mentioned in the plot notes because it doesn't matter. But basically, when Bellatrix is following Narcissa down Spinner's End, like, she hears something in the bushes and she just, like, fires off a killing curse, like, whatever. And then she's like, oops, like, not even oops, she's like, oh, whatever, like, it was just a fox. Like, she thought it was, like, could have been, like,
yeah,
a person, but it wasn't. Anyways, this, like, to me, kind of made me think about what we were kind of talking about, like, about Harry and how he couldn't perform an unforgivable curse until years later, not even in the heat of the moment after Sirius died, which was probably the first real heartbreak of his life. And it was just kind of interesting to me, at least, to, like, compare the two, because obviously we know that Barty Crouch Jr. said, like, to, you know, perform an unforgivable curse, like, you really have to mean it. And so it was just interesting to me how casually, like, we see her killing people and things and anything. Like, it's casual, yet she still means it. So it's, like, that just kind of was interesting to me. It's, like, about the conversation about, like, well, is there such a thing as, like, someone just being evil? Or, like, someone being, like, less good? Because Harry, you know, when he obviously tried torturing Bellatrix, was still, like, too good, even with all of that, you know, sadness and grief and rage that he was feeling because she had killed his last real, like, family member, he could not torture her. Like, he couldn't do it. But then, years later, he could, because arguably he had seen so much and had to do so much that he was less good, and he was able to really mean it, whether that's because of experience or because he's seen too many things or, like, whatever. But it was just, like, the only, like, point that I had is that, like, or, like, what made me think is that, like, without even knowing what it was, without seeing it, without really knowing if it was actually a threat to her life or her sister's, like, she was able to mean it and just, like, just, like, kill something. Like, whether that had been a person or five people or just a fox, like, it was. It was just interesting to me. Because it's, like, yeah, not only did she mean it, it was, like, casual. It wasn't, like, she, like, panicked and was, like, oh, my God, this could be a person threatening my family. And then she killed it. Like, it was just casual. And then she had no, like, reaction to it. So it's, like, I don't know. There was that, and then it also made me wonder about, like, the whole, like, is there such a thing as being evil? And if there is, does her being evil mean that she could mean it at any moment? Or does it, like, I don't know. Like, it's just, like, it was just something interesting. So, was not as groundbreaking as I thought it was. But, yeah, so that was it. That note has been sitting there for, like, almost 2 years. But yeah, it was just something, like, I feel, too, that it was kind of a purposeful addition, because, like, there was no reason to add in her killing, like, a fox, like, on her way to see Snape, you know? So I feel like, in a way, it was almost, like, there was, like, a reason, and I feel like maybe it was to, like, spark, like, this thinking, because it's, like, forgetting good versus evil, it's just, like, interesting to me that without even knowing what it was, like, she's able to, like, mean it and just, like, able to, like, kill things, like, without reaction, without a second thought. And, you know, then I think about, like, Harry, who I'd like, but is it also the same level of, like, meaning it or evil or whatever for all three of the curses? Because right. I think we talked about that too. Like, do you have to be evil to kill someone? Maybe. But does that mean you have to be evil to, like, imperious someone or to torture them? So it's like, I wonder what the levels are, and if there are levels, I'm assuming the most extreme one is to kill someone or something, and so it's just, like, it's interesting that, like, if we're calling that the third level, like, that it's still casual.
I don't know, I think it's possible that they could all need the same amount of meaning, considering there is also, like, the common thread in Harry Potter that there are things worse than death, you know? So, I think that, you know, you could do some worse things with Imperio, I bet, than you could just killing somebody.
Right.
So, yeah.
But yeah, that was the note. I don't even think it was, like, a resolved thought. It's just, like, an ongoing thought that I have sometimes. But, yeah.
Chapter 3, Will and Won't.
Ooh.
This is a very short chapter that's pretty much just a recap chapter, so we need one every book. So, Dumbledore...
Just in case someone accidentally ignored big number 7
somebody,
on the spine. And
it's
picked
6.
Up a, like,
I just did this.
6, whatever.
You know what? It's very confusing for this to be the 6th book with, like, the 7 Horcruxes being such a thing. I don't know. So, Albus Dumbledore, I don't know why I said it like that, Dumbledore comes to visit Harry at number 4 Privet Drive to take him to the Burrow, where he will spend the rest of his summer holidays. So,
how nice of him. I have something to say. this is just an add-in, because at the beginning of this chapter, like, it's, like, basically just saying that Dumbledore sent Harry a letter that's, like, I'm gonna pick you up, if that's cool, send me, like, yes or no, or I said that weird. If it's okay, send me yes through this owl. And I was kind of, like, wondering. Like, that is probably the shortest letter in all existence. Like, yes, signed Harry. So it's, like, I wonder if wizards ever developed, like, acronyms and abbreviations like we have in, like, texting for, like, letters that are just, like, super short. Or do they still, like, write everything?
I
want
to know how much these letters are contributing to pollution. Because how are you really going to send that short of a letter? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
What a waste of paper.
You know, yeah, that and the whole, like, the stuff at the beginning of the book, like, talking about how all of this weather stuff is actually just wizards having a bad day. They're ruining the planet. Like, climate change is their fault. Like, all
and
of these
Taylor
hurricanes
Swift.
And everything. Right. Right, yeah. All of them, wizards, Taylor Swift, they're just ruining everything.
Oh god, that's gonna be the name of this episode. That's so good. So Dumbledore reads Sirius's will, and it basically Harry inherits his wealth, Grimmauld Place, And Harry says that the Order of the Phoenix can continue to use it as their headquarters. And he also gets Creature. So Harry, henceforth, is now a slave owner. Awesome. It's not even...
Spectacular.
It's treated so terribly because he doesn't really feel that much sympathy about it, I don't think, at all. And it's so interesting considering the message of the last book.
Yeah, I feel like, honestly... I feel like if Creature hadn't played a hand in Sirius's death, Harry probably would have felt bad for him. But because he did, and, like, I think that Harry knows that Sirius was wrong, but as we saw last book, he's having a really difficult time coping with the fact that Sirius was not a perfect individual, like, he was flawed like everyone else. Because, it's really difficult to criticize people after they've died, because it feels a little, like... wrong. Like, it feels wrong. And especially for Harry, who's just lost someone that he idolized so much, and, like, I think he's having a difficult time realizing that he was not perfect, and that he himself could have been a little bit at fault for his own death, and so I feel like Harry's taking all of it out on Creature, because he has no idea how to cope, because no one taught him coping skills after Cedric died, and now he doesn't know how to function, like, a human, and so he's taking all of his, like, resentment and, like, grief out on Creature, who honestly, like, can't fully be blamed for what he did. Like, sure, he can be in a part because he's conscious enough to do it, so hence comes the blame, but at the same time, do we really know if house elves have, like, at human intelligence? And, like, even if they don't, Sirius mistreated him and caused him to, you know, resent living in that house and, you know, go and find people that were nice to him. So forgetting that whole thing is, well, are they really, like, human-like creatures? Like, it is Sirius's fault for mistreating him. But, like, I just think that Harry, like, doesn't know how to cope with sadness. And so he's just taking it out on Creature.
Because
he feels like it was Creature's fault.
I just think that after everything Harry has learned, it's a little concerning that he would not immediately, like, free Creature. Like, that wouldn't be his first instinct. And I know there's the worry that he would just immediately go to Bellatrix and work with them, but the whole point is that they deserve to have free will. Like, they deserve to have... to make their own choices. So, don't let him be your slave. Don't order him to go work at Hogwarts. Like, that's even worse.
I feel like, didn't Dumbledore say that in the book, that Creature might just go and spill all of, like, their secrets and stuff?
Doesn't seem right.
Oh, no, I'm not saying no. that, yeah, yeah, yeah. no. I'm, yeah. But it's just, like, yeah, it's strange. But, like, it's a little weird. And it, like, it makes me happy when he starts, like, when he gives him the locket next book and it, like, changes his life. Like, that makes me happy. But, like, we don't hear anything about Creature after the Battle of Hogwarts. So it's, like, we have no idea if Harry, like, kept him for the rest of his life.
It is so upsetting that we never get a wrap-up on the whole elf situation. Like, how is that not something that gets a conclusion to it? Like, a good conclusion? Like, is it ever even mentioned later that Hermione put a stop to it at all? I don't even think so. Like,
I don't know. I have no idea. Like, I read Cursed Child once, and I don't ever want to again.
So Dumbledore then sasses the Dursleys, and about their mistreatment of Harry. And then, but then still asks if he can be allowed to return again next year, one final time, because Harry apparently becomes an adult at 17 in the Wizarding World, which is an interesting thing that just got added now. I'm assuming it's because,
I feel like they mentioned it when Fred and George turned 17, because they got, like, special stuff.
I think that was because Harry needed to be an adult by the end of the series for everything to wear off, so.
Yeah. I really like the point Dumbledore makes when he tells Vernon and Petunia that they have mistreated Dudley maybe just as much as they've mistreated Harry, and they, like, freak out because they're like, what do you mean? Like, and it's like, and it's so true because, like, not only did they coddle and shelter him, and I don't even want to talk about that, but it's like, I don't even know, just like the way they treat him, not only as if he's an idiot, which they've done his whole life, but it's like, what, like, even though they're like spoiling him is like, that's doing wrong by your children if you're like spoiling them and like giving them literally everything they could possibly want and then letting them destroy it, because we hear about Dudley destroying one of his things at least once a book. But it's like, yeah, it's like the way that they've just raised him in this horrible, like, confining household is just like, but they would never know, because they think that because they're giving him material things that he should be fine and happy and like they're great. But like, have they ever had a conversation together? Like, do they talk? Are they, like, a real family? Or do they just, like, give him money and stuff and send him to boarding school? So it's, like, it's just, like, crazy to me that, like, they don't see it. But, like, they don't, obviously, because they're horrified when Dumbledore tells them that they're mistreating Dudley. I think they know that they're mistreating Harry. Like, they know. Yeah. They've locked him in his room and only fed him soup for, like, months. So it's like, they know they're doing that, but it's like, they couldn't possibly understand that there's more to parenting than just, like, giving toys and stuff, or bikes that he's gonna break, yeah, and stuff like that. But it's like, I love that he said that, because he knew that they were gonna freak out.
Yeah. Not that I wanted J.K. Rowling to add more, and maybe potentially mess up more things at the end, but I feel like if we were gonna have an epilogue, I would have preferred to have gotten and seen where more characters were at. Like, I would have loved to see where Creature's, yeah, at, would love to see where Dudley is at, even, like, where George is at. Like, all these people who I feel like, yeah, maybe could have benefited from seeing if they've grown in the future and what their current life is like. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like even doing multiple epilogues could have, yeah, been a possibility, because I know a lot of books that do that. And, like, she could have ended with the one of Harry and them at Platform 9 3/4 with the all is well thing. Like, that would have been, like, it's a great ending. Like, that it ties, yeah, everything up, almost everything up pretty nicely. So it's like, she could have had several epilogues leading up to that. And then the last one being, again, the Golden Trio closing off the whole,
yeah,
thing. Like, I think that could have worked.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, that's the end of that chapter. So, we're all good.
Fun fact. So, during this chapter, when Dumbledore gets there, it says in the book, Harry runs down the stairs with a pair of trainers, like, because he's packing his stuff, mm-hmm, and, like, whatever, and then he just is holding them the whole time. When I first read this book, I was 10, maybe 9, and it said that Harry ran downstairs with a pair of trainers in his hand. I didn't understand that those were shoes.
Yeah.
I thought that those were underwear. Like, that's what it sounded like to me.
Oh.
And I was like, I thought that that's what he was holding the whole time. And I was like, this scene is so awkward. Like, what is going on? Like, it just, like, it felt so strange to me that it was never explained. And I was like, why would he, like, that's so weird. Like, just leave them upstairs. But then finally one day, when I was, like, 12, I, like, I don't know if I read it again or if I looked it up or if I had just heard it and knew. But then I realized, and I was like, oh, I'm an idiot. They're shoes. That's what they
call
shoes.
That is so funny.
Yeah, every time I reread this book, I remember that, and it just makes me laugh. So, I thought I would share it with you guys, and I know that everyone who lives in the UK right now is, like, sighing, because that's just, like, ridiculous, but it's okay. I know now.
Okay, so...
Time for trivia!
Time for trivia!
Yay!
Okay.
Okay. Do you want to go first?
I would love to go first. Thank you. What is the name of the man in the portrait?
I'm never going to remember this.
Ulrik Gamp.
I never would have remembered that.
Yep.
Okay. I was getting really desperate. I went backwards, like, in chronological order to do my trivia, and so you're gonna probably know this one. How many bands of flame wrapped around Snape's and Narcissa's hands when making the unbreakable vow?
What an interesting question. Three?
Yes.
Oh my gosh! Oh my god, I'm a genius. What bridge collapsed?
I don't want to say something stupid and, like, offend the people of London or England. Hold on. I'm not looking it up. I just have to make sure what I'm about to say is an actual bridge. London Bridge? I don't know.
London Bridge is falling down.
I know.
That would have been a little on the nose, real, I so think.
It's, yeah, I know. It's not like a fake bridge that I said. That's why I had to look it up. I don't know.
The Brockdale Bridge.
Never would have remembered that. Okay. What plant of the Dursleys is said to be thriving?
Oh my god, I put, this is a question of mine too. Agapanthus.
Froze. Oh no, it's back. It's back. Okay, we're good. Okay, go ahead.
What was the name of the junior minister that is spending time with his family? Because he's going insane.
Right, right. Oh, I remember I wrote something about that because he was under the imperious curse and he said that the guy was like quacking like a duck in public. And I thought that was really funny. I have no idea.
Herbert Trolley.
Okay.
Herbert, I should say. I said Herbert.
Dumbledore used his wand how many times at the Dursley's house?
Did you count?
He did, yeah.
I'm gonna say 5. Did I get it?
Yes!
Oh my gosh!
You're having a great day.
How am I getting these numbers? I'm having a great day today. Besides Amelia Bones, what was the name of the other woman who was murdered?
I have no idea.
You're not gonna guess?
Is it another wizard, or is it just some random muggle woman that they named?
I don't remember.
I'm having such a bad day today. No, I don't know.
Emmeline Vance.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. What month is Dudley's birthday in?
Well, it has to be over the summer, I believe. Because it happens at the beginning of the first book. So...
I don't remember the first book at all.
Is it June? Yes. Ah! Oh my god! This is such a great day for me!
Petunia says it in the third chapter because Dumbledore is like, Harry's gonna come of age in July or this year, and she's like, no, because Dudley's birthday is in June and he doesn't come of age until the year after next. So, yeah. Mm.
Are we done?
What?
Are we done?
No. Oh, wait, no, I forgot. We had the same question, so I have one more.
Yes. Okay.
When Dumbledore tells Vernon that he mistreated Dudley, what nickname does Vernon refer to Dudley as?
Oh, is it something they normally use, or, I'm assuming he wouldn't use the same nicknames that Petunia does, because I just can't see that coming out of Vernon, but who knows. Dudball.
No.
Okay, well, I give up.
Okay, well, you could guess again, and you would lose the point, but you would still win.
I don't want to disappoint.
Dudders.
Oh my god, I was gonna say Dudders! Shut up! I'm so mad! I would have gotten everything right. Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Okay, well today, Colin has won 4-1, so he will be doing the question of the day for the next episode.
Oh my god, today was so good.
Okay, thank you all so much for tuning into this episode of Ron and Hermione Minus a Romance, and be sure to give us a follow on Instagram at Ron and Hermione Minus a Romance, or on Twitter at Ron underscore Hermione MTR. Shoot us an email at vulcanoutbones@gmail.com, and rate our podcast on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. We appreciate you all very much, and be sure to tune in next week, where we'll be covering chapters 4, 5, and 6 of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. Woo!